understands UAA requirements should they choose to pursue it. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Ms. Hall and or Mr. Kuhn, in whatever order you wish. It's up to you.
Okay. My name is Jerry Hall. I'm the president of the elected board of the San Miguel Alito Mutual Water Company, and I'm speaking on their behalf. I just want to say San Miguel Alito Mutual Water Company works hard to ensure that we comply with all applicable water quality regulations, and we're careful that we do not pollute the San Luis Obispo Creek. Spend what's required to meet all applicable regulations, do the job, and protect our scarce water resources. We take care of our neighbors and believe that the city of San Luis Obispo should do the same. We strongly chastise the city for seeking a de-designation of San Luis Obispo Creek simply because it does not want to pay the money necessary to upgrade its wastewater treatment plant to address its nitrate problem. While we understand the financial hardships that many local governments currently face, removal of the municipal use designation for San Luis Obispo Creek is unwarranted and benefits only the purse strings of San Luis Obispo to the detriment of the Avila Valley and the environment. While the city now conveniently cites to the requirement that it must discharge effluent into the San Luis Obispo Creek to protect steelhead trout, this is a relatively new requirement. It was the city that initially chose to dump its wastewater into the San Luis Obispo Creek, and they must now address and mitigate the problems their effluent created. Dedesignation would allow the city to pollute the waters that supply public drinking water to over 600 service connections, and there is little doubt that San Luis Obispo's nitrates will find their way into the aquifer itself from which hundreds of others take their water. Economic considerations cannot take precedence over public health. We would like to remind the board that it is charged with a fiduciary duty to keep our waters pollution-free as possible. We urge the board to take the appropriate action, do the right thing, and refuse to pursue or support the de-designation of San Luis Obispo Creek for municipal use. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Mr. Kuhn, and then I noticed I have two other speaker cards for the water company, Mr. Gehring and Mr. Carmel, so, and then Gordon Hensley would be the last speaker, but go ahead.
Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Rick Kuhn, and I'm the general manager of San Miguel Alito Mutual Water Company. As a mutual water company, we provide water service and wastewater treatment to our shareholders based on a not-for-profit revenue model. 100% of all fiscal revenue funds the operation and maintenance of our systems, a yearly capital improvement budget, and contributes to our capital reserves. San Miguel Alito serves the residents of San Luis Bay Estates, the Avila Village Commercial Center, the Avila Beach Resort Golf Course, and the San Luis Bay Inn Timeshare. We have over 630 service connections and provide potable water to over 1,500 people daily. In addition, San Miguel Alito can also provide water for potable use or fire protection through an emergency connection to CSA 12, which includes the town of Avila Beach and Port San Luis. San Miguel Alito has used well water from the San Luis Obispo Creek aquifer as its primary source of drinking water since 1969. In 1995, San Miguel Alito shareholders voted to become a state water subcontractor, and begin receiving state water through the Lopez transmission line. San Miguel Alito's use of state water is directly dependent upon the reliability of state water through the Sierra snowpack and the environmental concerns of Delta pumping. For instance, for the first few months of last year, we only received 5% of a requested allocation from the state water project. We also are not provided with any state water while the pipeline is undergoing maintenance or repair. For 2010, this type of shutdown was for the whole month of November and into December. Our wells provided 100% of our water used. San Miguel Alito shareholders rely on their wells drawing from the San Luis Obispo Creek aquifer as a primary source of potable water and as the only source of water that they can control. Although San Luis Obispo Creek encompasses 82 square miles of watershed, San Miguel Alito's wells are geographically constrained to an area where the aquifer is narrow and shallow. All surface and subsurface waters drain through us. That is why we need a clean water supply and must maintain the MUN designation of San Luis Obispo Creek. It is important to remember that although the city has narrowed the focus of the UAA to the nitrate and THM levels in the surface waters to justify the de-designation, we must also consider all components found in the wastewater discharge stream and their effects on the surface and groundwaters. The surface and groundwaters of San Luis Obispo Creek are vulnerable to both the nitrates, chloride, and sodium levels that we monitor now, but also those that we do not monitor for, but may in the future, such as man-made compounds and pharmaceuticals. Finally, San Miguelito requests the Regional Board to keep the MUN designation of San Luis Obispo Creek and deny the de-designation request of the city. Thank you for your time.
Mr. Kuhn, have you sampled, when you've sampled your water supply, have you found any evidence of connectivity with the city?
Yes, and Mr. Gehring will address the interconnectivity.
Okay.
Of the intertie. We're groundwater. We're over 200 feet away from the stream. So we meet all health department rules for being...
Right, but have you found any components or constituents that you have...
Usually it's the electrical conductivity that...
Well, no, anything. Repeat. Anything that you've picked up and you're monitoring.
Not in the constituents, no. But in the drawdown test we did, and Mr. Gehring will go into that.
Okay.
I'd just like to add to that really quickly, if I may, to try to clarify your question. What limited water quality data that we've seen from the city's wells, and this is consistent with the other small water supply system wells that we've gotten data from the county and that they've indicated to us, is that none of the wells have ever exceeded any of the standards for drinking water constituents. That doesn't necessarily mean that, and as far as I know, there hasn't been a comparison looking at other constituents that would definitively show, and that's one of the things that we've been asking about and saying, let's do a more detailed analysis to determine that.
Okay, Mr. Gehring?
Yes, sir, Jim Gehring. I'm the engineer for the San Miguelito Mitchell Water Company. I'm an employee of the firm of Gehring, Taylor & Associates in Aurora Grande. We're about 50 years into business so far, and I've been there for 39, I think. And I've been licensed in the state for 36. If you take every, let me back for a second. I've had a hand in the development, testing, and treatment of every single municipal well that has been drilled in the Five Cities area since 1973. Every single well that's been drilled for the Napomo Community Services District since 1985, and every single municipal well that's been drilled for the city of Lompoc since 1995. We've operated the nitrate removal plant for the city of Grover Beach, which removes nitrates from well water for 23 years so far. If you look at the early studies that allowed the creation of San Miguelito Mitchell Water Company, San Luis Bay Estates, every one of those studies says that there's a hydraulic connection between the company's shallow wells and San Luis Obispo Creek. In conference with Mr. Tim Cleath, I'm sure every board member will recall Mr. Cleath testifying before you in the past, and we have both concluded beyond any shadow of a doubt that there is a hydraulic connection between our wells and San Luis Obispo Creek. These three wells are between 28 and 32 feet deep. They are screened about 18 to 30 feet down. They are in the same alluvial gravels and aquifer that the creek flows in. The slide that's up on the screen that Mr. Keeling put up for me is an example of a drawdown test on well 5 at San Miguelito in 1980. It's one of the reasons that the conclusions I've related to you were arrived at. And up here is the ground level for the well. The water level at the start of the test was down at around 12 feet. And at the start of this test, the water starts to draw down the casing. Each of those dots is a point in time with the water falling in the casing. And what you see here is that curve starts down, and at 1 minute you're down about 6 feet. But here at 4 minutes, bam, all of a sudden that drawdown curve goes dead flat. That tells you that there is an immediate close source of water that is refilling that aquifer and providing water to that well. If this were a homogeneous aquifer, you would see that that drawdown would continue to decline. And it may decline continuously for a period of 1 or 2 months. But here in 4 minutes, we're receiving water essentially directly from the creek.
Mr. Gehring?
Yes.
Can you help me out and just give me a really brief description of how a drawdown is conducted?
All right. So what drawdown is, I'm sorry, I'm an engineer, so I'm not, let me get back up for a second. When you put a pump in a well, the water will stand at a certain distance below the ground, but the minute you start that pump, the water starts to fall in the well. And it continues to fall, and what we call a cone of depression widens until enough water is flowing into the well to equal pump production. All right, so in a homogeneous aquifer, that process continues for hours, days, and oftentimes months. But here, that process suddenly stops, and we get an indication of direct recharge in 4 minutes from the time of start of that pump. Does that help? Now, there's been some discussion that, this can't be a direct connection because the nitrates are not the same in the groundwater as are in the creek water. But, I've done a lot of pilot testing myself, and I can tell you we don't have a precise handle on water treatment chemistry, and there is an explanation that groundwater aquifer, highly oxygenated with lots of organic material, is acting as a treatment removal system. It looks like I'm out of time, so thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Tim Carmel. And then last speaker is Gordon Hensley.
Honorable Chairman Young, members of the board, my name is Tim Carmel. I serve as general counsel to the San Miguelito Mutual Water Company. San Miguelito agrees with the staff's recommendation that the water board not pursue the de-designation of the creek as a municipal use. Federal law requires that each state specify appropriate water uses to be achieved and protected. In making this determination under federal law, the state, quote, shall take into consideration the water quality standards of downstream water and shall ensure that its water quality standards provide the attainment and maintenance of the water quality standards of all downstream users. Most importantly, a designated use cannot be removed unless it is neither an existing nor a feasible use. Staff correctly points out that all currently available evidence suggests that the municipal use of San Luis Creek downstream of the wastewater treatment plant is an existing use. Pumping test data that you just saw from our shallow wells 25 feet, 200 feet from the creek indicate and located within the alluvial aquifer demonstrate and indicate that there's direct communication between our wells and the creek. The city insists that San Miguelito well water has no connection to the creek because it is groundwater, and thus, using the city's logic, there are no current municipal uses of the creek. Your staff, San Miguelito's engineer, its hydrologist, and virtually every other engineer that I've talked to regarding this issue laughs at the city's somewhat self-serving viewpoint. Labeling it groundwater or groundwater under the influence of surface water will not change the plain fact that there's an unambiguous direct connection between the creek and the wells. Take that as a given. There is not surface water in our wells. Doesn't change anything. The city also relies on health department reports that San Miguelito wells are not currently adversely affected by nitrates in order to support its case for de-designation. As you've just heard Mr. Gehring say, the city's argument fails to recognize likely occurrence of denitrification processes with the stream channel and in the alluvium. And the nutrient uptake by riparian vegetation adjacent to the stream also eliminates nitrates. Staff also recognizes that the city's argument that municipal use is an infeasible use is fatally flawed. The city appeals to a requirement that it discharges 2.5 cubic feet per second of effluent into the creek in order to protect in-stream habitat of the steelhead trout. According to the city, the municipal use is infeasible because it would prevent the city from meeting this minimum discharge requirement. The city reaches its desired conclusion by adopting a convenient definition of feasibility, despite the fact that nothing in the Code of Federal Regulations indicates that cost should play any role in a feasibility analysis. The city concludes that the use is infeasible because treatment of effluent would require a large expenditure of funds. There's only one issue at play here, money. The city's approach to the problem many jurisdictions currently face is irresponsible. Actions by surrounding districts indicate, and the cities indicate, that this is a common problem and it's often addressed and remedied. We just urge you, not to proceed with de-designation of San Luis Obispo Creek for municipal purposes.
Thank you for your comments. Mr. Hensley.
You do this because I hate being last. Gordon Hensley, San Luis Obispo Coast Keeper. As you, most of you know, that the goals that all of the California Coast Keepers strive for have to do with fishable, swimmable, and drinkable waters. And I believe that that is very similar to your board's vision. And while the city and your board should be commended for much of the work that has been done on San Luis Creek in the past, I am opposing this particular request. The removal of the municipal beneficial use is frankly inconsistent with your board's direction and approach on other projects throughout your region. The potential future municipal use is actually unknown. There are techniques on the horizon. There are techniques that we don't know about yet that could make that a usable water source. And what it appears to be happening is that this is a request by an upstream user to foreclose the options of downstream potential users. The city's strongest argument seems to be the county health note that they would not allow municipal use. However, on page 3 of your staff report, under the discussion paragraph, it gives a little more light on the assumptions that that perhaps the city has overlooked. It says, in part, the potable use that they would never allow because of the potable use allow potable use because it is effluent dominated for most of the year. That is a water quality issue. Techniques could improve that water quality. They could attain Title 22 use. You have required that of other jurisdictions within your region. It is something that could be done. My concluding thoughts are that I'd like you to just say no to any further discussion of removing the municipal beneficial use designation. However, if you feel like you need to go somewhere, I would urge you to support staff's direction for approach number 2. Thank you.
Thank you. That's it for speaker cards. Mr. Briggs.
Can I ask Mr. Kuhn a question, please? You going to put the timer on me?
No, I turned it off.
Yes, sir.
Hi. You're general manager for your agency, similar to we have the city's managers here. You have similar responsibility. And I should know the answer to this, but I'm not sure. But you don't have a separate denitrification facility for your wastewater disposal in Cherry Canyon, do you?
No. It's a pond system.
Right. That's what I thought. So do you have wells downstream?
Excuse me?
Do you have wells downstream, down gradient?
Yes, we have monitoring wells.
No, I mean supply wells.
No.
Okay.
Our wastewater treatment facilities in Wild Cherry Canyon.
Right.
Which, I don't know if you want to put up the exhibit I can show you relative to the...
Oh, that's okay.
Okay.
It's a hypothetical question.
Okay.
But, like I say, you're in kind of the same shoes as the folks who are sitting in the...
Correct.
...second row here with the city. So, if there was a well downstream, and that groundwater, is like other groundwater throughout the region, is designated as potentially municipal beneficial use.
Correct. We would have to handle...
So if you had a well downstream and it had no signs of degradation from nitrate, therefore did not seem to be degraded by your facility, but we said you've got to put in a comparable amount of money, say $1 million denitrification facility, would you say okay? Or would you question that?
Well, we would question it and study it, but I mean, we would, as stewards for our facilities, we would do the best we can to achieve the standards that are required by the regional board. We've already attempted to do that with our sodium and chloride on our own by restricting the use of on-site regenerating water softeners.
Right, with an eye towards recycling, and that makes sense for recycling because that's a constituent that doesn't match up with recycling. But
correct.
If you didn't have a conflict in terms of nitrate with downgradient uses, it seems to me that it would be kind of a hard sell for your constituents to say you got to come up with $1 million, and they say, why? And you might say a few bad things about that regional board agency.
Well, yes, we understand the city's predicament and stuff like that, but in our case, there are no downstream water uses.
Okay.
We have the land. This is really funny because Atascadero Mutual and San Miguelito are the only two mutual water companies in the county, and they're both here today looking at different things. We own the water rights.
Oh, here we go again.
Here we go again. Downstream of our treatment facility, we have the water rights.
Mm-hmm.
So we're regulating. We would not allow a well below downstream of our facilities.
We have special folks here today, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's quite a coincidence.
All right, thanks.
Okay.
Well, I don't think there's much for us to do, right? This is really a status report. It's turned into a status report, and you're not asking us to do anything.
Well, why don't you just reiterate the steps we intend to take? I think that would be helpful.
The steps we need to take or that we're
intend,
going to take?
Well,
that
you're going to take.
Okay.
They're going to take.
Well, essentially what the city is requesting, and I think it's reasonable, because it follows what we've been asking them kind of to do for a number of years now is to address the downgradient groundwater issue. And so our approach is somewhat changed versus the approach to that we proposed. So as I've indicated to the city, I'm committed to work with them and get together a stakeholder group like they've said, and they put up in their slide, county health, public health, San Miguelito, whatever agencies that need to be involved and sit down and determine, you know, whether or not there is communication and, you know, to define that. And then from that point, then we decide, you know, go on to whether or not we're going to have a discussion about a basin plan amendment to remove that beneficial use.
And then the biostimulatory issue, when does that get factored into all of this discussion? Or is that something EPA is doing separately?
Well, EPA is not doing anything separately. Okay. I think they've made it clear that they'd like us to address that other half of the TMDL. Okay. And, you know, it depends on where our TMDL priorities are, and I'm not party to that prioritization list. I think when that really comes into play is if they do talk about pursuing the municipal beneficial use de-designation, that for the nitrate number to go away in the current TMDL, we're going to have to revise that TMDL anyway, but EPA is going to ask us to do the biostim portion. They probably won't even look at it if we're just going to ask them to lower the waste load allocation based on the immune standard without looking at the biostim. This is where it really gets kind of fuzzy and tricky in my mind about where we're going to go with this. I'm certainly open for suggestions. I was kind of hoping that we'd get some discussion and some dialogue from the board about their feelings about how we should move on this, quite frankly. But
I think that's a hard one.
That's why I'm hoping we can have.
This is a tough nut to crack, and I feel for the city. You know, they inadvertently got themselves in this pickle, you know, when they wanted to discharge to the creek thinking they were doing just a great, wonderful thing, and kind of the law of unintended consequences has reared its ugly head and has boxed them in. And it seems like a lot of this, the control here is not even, it's not in their control. EPA, I think, you know, the federal government has some control over what happens also.
I think the biggest question, and is the question, the key policy question that Dave Hicks put up.
Mm-hmm.
I've had discussions with county health department staff and the State Department of Public Health person who regulates the public water supply wells in that area, and I've asked them that question. I said, well, if we do this study, where do we draw the line? Is it 5% under the influence of the creek in the city's effluent? Is it 10%? And they don't have an answer.
Well, we can't give you an answer to that.
No, that's, I know that.
That's a public health scientific opinion.
And the U.S. EPA and everyone,
no
we
idea.
All need to sit down together and agree on a number, and I don't know that we can do that in 6 months.
In pursuing this particular, or focusing on this particular issue, what would happen to the trihalomethane problem in the meantime?
I'm sorry, say again?
In pursuing this focus as the next step, what happens to the trihalomethane problem in the meantime?
Well, it's interesting because there's a time schedule order. And it's an attachment to, I don't know if you looked at it, but what it does is it lays out two tracks for the city. One is to look at regulatory strategies. Mm-hmm. Their main regulatory strategy is de-designating the creek. Mm-hmm. There's also right. developing a site-specific objective. But then ultimately they have to meet the limits in that time schedule order by March 2015. And this is the second time schedule order that they've had. I don't know if we can issue them another time schedule order. So the clock is ticking on the THM issue. Maybe mm-hmm. Francis can help. I mean, how can we provide an additional time schedule order if we get to close to 2015 and we haven't answered this question yet?
I would have to look at the specific facts at the time. The law has changed a number of times, and I don't know how it applies specifically here.
Yeah. My basic understanding is I thought they get two shots at it.
Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't be inclined to consider an extension myself. Yeah. I mean, I'm looking for a way to address that problem sooner than later.
Question I have here is that it sure seems like a prima facie case has been made that there is communication between the city's discharge and these groundwater wells from the San Miguelito Water Company. Therefore, why isn't the city's discharge being considered a recharge of groundwater? And Title 22 come into effect?
I'm not sure what you mean. I mean,
well, in a sense, they're recharging this groundwater basin. Now, in order to do that, don't you need Title 22 regulations?
Well, they have tertiary they have tertiary treatment.
Right.
Yeah.
I think maybe what you're thinking about is if it was akin to an injection project,
yes.
then there would
yeah.
be more stringent.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's different.
Yeah.
Okay.
The rub with that is that, according to the County Health Department and State Department of Public Health, the wells that they regulate in that alluvial aquifer, they all meet the Title 22 drinking water standards.
Okay.
They're not in violation of those standards. Now, if you're talking about aquifer recharge and reuse, and I also brought that question up with California Department of Public Health point person for this part of our region, and I said, well, you know, if we determine that there is connectivity and that those wells are pulling from that, I mean, can we apply that? It's a policy at this point. It's a draft regulation, essentially. Can we apply that? And he said, no, it's more complicated than that because of the transport times and the mixing. And then that's when I asked him the question. I said, well, you know, what is the percentage that's acceptable before we have to make these kinds of decisions? Then the one decision is if it is found to be under the influence of the city's effluent, when does the health department come in and say that people cannot use those wells for drinking water and they need to find an alternative water supply? And this is another catch-22 that this opens up the door to this discussion that this may happen. Or the people down there that don't know that they're potentially drinking water that's coming from the city's discharge, they may demand an alternative water supply regardless of what the data shows. Mm.
Okay. Any other board comments? Mr.
Well,
Jeffries, you're taking a deep breath.
It's too deep for my shallow mind.
we all have headaches now.
Dr. Wolf.
I need to look at a matrix with all the different, we're dealing with different deadlines, different timetables, different requirements, different set of standards. we need a clear matrix saying what all the interactions are, and then we can make an informed decision on where we go from here. Because I'm a little concerned. I would say, okay, we go to the next step, and we're going to spend a lot of hours of staff time, both actually city and our time, you know, maybe chasing something that if we look at the total picture and all the interaction, we may say, gee, that, you know, this is not workable. And perhaps there are other solutions available. You know, the glass is half full versus half empty. Right now we're focusing on the glass being half empty. Maybe it's half full, looking at other beneficial use, as some other cities are doing currently. I mean, the city has done a great job with the purple pipe and, you know, irrigating your city parks with recycled water. So I think we need maybe, in this case, a little bit more of out-of-the-box thinking, because we're kind of focusing right now on, God, we're stuck here. And before going to the next step of plowing into all the regulations, say, okay, let's just see what else can we do. You know, there may be some other beneficial use of water that can be applied. You know, maybe there could be some blending, because, you know, when Fish and Game and NOAA came up with a, you know, 2.5 CFS, you know, there's obviously a blending element in there, because we know that the steelhead trout, you know, the nitrate content is going to vary with the flow of the creek, depending on what kind of year we have. So we have dilution rates. So maybe we need to look at that whole hydrology a little bit and say, well, what about if we had some, you know, some blending that would still meet the intent of maintaining the deep pools during the winter month, pardon me, during the summer months. So I just think, because it's complex, we're throwing a lot of things, but we don't really have a whole big picture of what if scenarios. And maybe I'm complicating things saying this, but you know, it is a difficult issue. There's a lot of great minds in this room, and you know, maybe we can do a little brainstorming before we get too much in the process of looking at regulation 1, 2, 3, etc. That's my suggestion.
And but you're talking about having them do the brainstorming. I mean, that. What kind of direction should we give them in terms of, you know, kind of their next steps? They're suggesting what they're going to do.
Yeah.
And?
Well, I've, you know, the city of San Luis Obispo is not unique in the state of California having some of these issues. And, you know, there are other cities who have the same predicament about discharge and had to deal with it. So perhaps, you know, what we should do is have a review of what else has been done. You know, I'm a strong believer in learning from history and what others have done, and then build up on it, rather than our own, you know, trying to come up with an isolated solution. So it's perhaps a review, a survey of other similar projects, how they dealt with it, and obviously it's a moving target, because as mentioned earlier, the rules change, you know, almost on a yearly basis or less than that. But that way we could see perhaps another model on how to address, you know, the duality of beneficial use and still meeting standards and looking at the city long-term goal in terms of its, you know, growth and needs to expand its facilities perhaps. And then being able to write over a timetable that say, all right, we're, you know, we need 5 more years, and at that time we're going to have to do X amount of upgrades anyway. So mm-hmm. Let's see how we can mitigate 5 years.
Are they currently violating the nitrate effluent standards in their permit? Is that, that's not an issue?
No.
Okay.
No, there is no nitrate limit in their permit currently.
Okay.
It would be coming up in the next, that would be the issue coming up in the next upgrade.
Yeah. This is one of the issues is that we haven't fully revised or reissued their permit, I think, since 2002.
Right.
We did a revision of certain components of it in 2005. When we do a full permit reissuance for them, we are legally obligated to apply the waste load allocation that's in the TMDL. And it'll be a limit of 10 milligrams per liter nitrate as nitrogen.
Mm-hmm. When does that occur?
When we revise the permit.
So the,
this has been the outstanding issue.
Right? Okay. Yeah, this is one of the reasons that we have not revised their permit.
So my question is, the city is willing to invest time and effort, staff time, and costs of conducting the stakeholder process to get a better, clear picture of a solution, a policy solution. Knowing that the EPA is standing there looking at this saying, we're not really in favor of this, we really do not want to see the municipal designation go away, and you just read us a letter from U.S. Fish and Wildlife saying they're not going to support it. The city is willing to pursue this process and risk losing time on the under the current time schedule order. Is that what I'm hearing? Yeah?
I think that's a question for the city then.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's essentially correct. I mean, this is a very critical process for us.
Yeah.
That the MUN beneficial use doesn't exist. We know that others will, and when those are adopted by this board, we will comply with those. But MUN is the focus of what we're asking for here. And that, you know, continuing the process does allow us to get that clearer picture, which helps us, like one of the board members mentioned, with where we're going in the future, whether it's with our growth and capacity, the discharge requirements, or other goals of the city. So, yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I think giving this process the additional focus and consideration to really narrow it down, I'd be willing to support that, provided that we're not at this point saying that we would be willing to consider removing that MUN designation until we see more data, and that we recognize that there's a time schedule order in place that we expect the city to meet the conditions of that time schedule order. So really, it's up to the city to figure out how they're going to put the data together that shows, you know, a different path that has some justification, some rationale to it. And perhaps in that process, I'm guessing that EPA would be part of the stakeholder process, do you think?
I certainly hope so.
Is Janet Pinner still
here?
Yeah. You would participate. Right. Well, then in that case, I could support the city's recommendation. And I heard you say, though, you didn't know if you could do that in 6 months.
I don't know. I think this question and then the underlying question that's associated with that are the real, real difficult ones. Mm-hmm. I mean, it would be a precedent-setting decision, is my understanding. With far-reaching implications.
So, Mr. Chair, you can come back to us when you can come back to us. I mean, we don't have to give you a deadline on that.
Right.
You know.
Right.
Yeah, we're not asking for a deadline.
Yeah, right.
I appreciate the discussion. I really do.
Okay. Michael, did you have a comment?
One of my concerns is that last sentence up there is what you were just talking about, coming back in 6 months. We have no idea
what's
going to happen.
Right.
And also, the issue really isn't in the board's court or even in board staff's court.
Right.
The issue is in the city of San Luis Obispo's court and San Miguelito's as well, you know, and other downstream users. So I want to be really careful about the indication the board is giving and committing staff to a certain amount of time or a certain amount of effort. We don't have the resources to participate a great deal in an effort like this. So we would want to limit our involvement relative to, you know, the merits of it and the potential success of it. So we'd like to be able to measure that as we go through this.
And one of the reasons we picked 6 months is because we have that time schedule order, and it's one of those timelines that we're trying to meet, too. So we're trying to be considerate of, you know, what staff has got to face with TSO and with us, but at the same time a reasonable amount. So, I mean, we picked 6 months because it's kind of definable. I mean, it's, I think, definitely something we can talk about as we get more into the stakeholder process, but we'd like to define that because we've got some deadlines, too, that we need to meet.
Hi, I'm Carrie Mattingly. I'm the Director of Utilities for the city, and I want the board to know that we are more than willing to pay for you to hire staff to put resources, to give resources for you to hire specialized people that you pick to be able to help this process get through. So we're willing to put resources toward this.
Hmm. Well, you can, that's a great offer. I think you can discuss that with
we've talked about that
with Mr. Briggs, and it doesn't need board approval to do, so no problem there. Just a thought I had on the water connection and the MUN designation. You know, if I was the water company, I'd want to know if there's any chemicals of emerging concern. And I know that's out here, but that out here is going to be coming closer and closer to drinking water standards at some point, and it would be a concern I would have. Even though there's no standards for some, for most of those chemicals, I'd be curious to know if they're there. So anyway, okay, I think that is all we have for this item, correct? Board, all right, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks. Last item is public forum.
This was like a brain teaser. You know, I know this one, the Rubik's Cube. Yeah. Can the board figure out the moves here? Our last item, folks, is public comment. Is that right, Mr.
Correct.
Briggs?
That's correct.
Okay.
I don't think we have any cards.
I don't